It would be wonderful if the bathtub ring around Lake Mead was shrinking, but it's not. Drought conditions are wreaking havoc with all of Nevada's lakes and rivers, as they have for several years now. And now Lake Tahoe is expected to drop so low that no water will flow from the lake into the Truckee River. And while no one can say how long the drought will last, the dry conditions are impacting the state's agriculture and livestock businesses while producing dangerous conditions that may fuel wildfires. With conditions so dry, we thought we would talk water with Pat Mulroy, Senior Fellow for Climate Adaptation and Environmental Policy at Brookings Mountain West and longtime head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Pat, welcome back to the program.
Hi, how are you?
I am doing well, thank you. We know the ski hills up north are closing early for lack of snow. Yosemite National Park is seeing some of the roads open, earliest time ever. There's been a request by water authorities in the Reno area to cut water use. We're hearing the term mega drought getting batted around. Desalination's being discussed in California. All this stuff adds up, and it doesn't sound good for anyone in the southwestern United States, including Nevada. Should we start looking for other parts of the country to move to?
No, I don't think we need to go quite to that extreme.
Okay, good.
Absolutely not.
All right. Well, what's the story then? I mean, it sounds like there's not a silver bullet to cure everything here. But what's going on in the meantime as this drought surrounds us?
Well, I think you just hit the nail on the head. There is no silver bullet. I think it's a combination of various actions, and some of them are longer-term planning efforts, and some of them are shorter-term on-the-ground response actions.
All right. Now, we may be talking to other states in the Southwest, as I understand it, but none of us has adequate water supplies. Shouldn't we be talking to the Northwest or the Midwest, where the problems are not quite so severe?
Well, it's something that I've suggested for quite some time, especially in the Colorado River Basin. Yes, there are some short-term measures that we can take, and I think the three urban areas in the lower basin and Denver are doing a Herculean effort to try to reach out to agriculture to get them to be a partner in helping in conservation measures in the short term. But I think invariably we're going to have to face the reality that somehow this water system is going to have to be augmented from somewhere.
Now, years ago, at a conference in the Midwest, you suggested a pipeline from Midwestern states to the Southwest. Not quite.
What I said was, look, if there are going to be increased flooding conditions in the Midwest, and flood control within the Mississippi watershed is going to have to be rethought in order to protect communities, then what are we going to be doing with those floodwaters? Should those floodwaters be taken to areas that are inherently predicted to be going drier? That's essentially the approach.
Well, you bring up that idea, or you brought up that idea, and it was essentially ignored or just
kind of
waved away. Do you think it's being ignored or waved away in quite the same fashion today?
You know, I did a KNPR or a NPR interview here recently, mm-hmm. and I got really interesting responses from around the country. Yeah. The idea is beginning to find people that are a little bit more serious about looking at it as a possibility. And you know, at the end of the day, I don't think we're in a position where we can wipe any option off the table. You know, trying to find that one silver bullet is not going to do it.
So how would you find the multiple silver bullets that might be needed? How would you go about doing that?
Well, foundationally, it's conservation. I think the West, this is a wake-up call to the West. I think areas that aren't metered, it's time to get serious and meter them. I think areas that have ignored the need to conserve are going to have to get very serious about it. Urban water use, agricultural water use, how we consume the resource is something that has to be looked at. Now, that has its limitations. You can only go so far, because you talk to anybody who runs a water agency and they say, look, The slop in the system is where we go when droughts hit. That's our opportunity to shave back water use without causing too much pain. Yeah. When you take that slop out permanently, and when you become way more efficient in how you use water, you lose that cushion. So there is a limit on how far you can go. Next, I think local efforts like Los Angeles Water and Power has recently adopted a resource plan that said, look, the next 25 years, all our water supplies are going to come from conservation that we just talked about and reuse. There are any number of communities that simply discharge their wastewater into the ocean or in the alternative, put it in evaporation ponds and let it evaporate. There's an opportunity. Southern Nevada is fortunate. 93% of our wastewater is recycled. Those communities are going to have to invest in reuse projects. Then there are opportunities, although they will be limited either by land use, by power availability, by the volumes they can produce, but there are desalination opportunities. People think desalination is the one silver bullet, and it's not. There are serious environmental issues that have to be addressed in terms of the brine disposal and how that affects certain pockets where the disposal occurs to the species in that area, but it will be a part of the solution. Then you're going to have to look at more localized augmentation projects. And finally, once you've shaved all the excess out, once you've exhausted what the other augmentation opportunities are more locally, then you're going to have to say, okay, now what is left in terms of our risk exposure and what's left in terms of our augmentation needs. And at that point, and once the Corps of Engineers begins to look at flood control in those areas differently, then there's an opportunity to have a conversation to say, look, can we solve multiple problems with one approach? That day, given how quickly the impacts of a changing climate are hitting us, may come sooner than we think.
Now, I want to circle back, Pat Mulroy, to you mentioned desalination plants in California. This is something that you had also talked about some years ago when you were at the Southern Nevada Water Authority, the notion of funding desalination plants in California in exchange for their share of water from the Colorado River. Is that still an idea worth thinking about, or is the river going so low at this point that their share might not have a lot of value to us because it's disappearing?
Well, you just hit the nail on the head. The issue has always been, under what conditions in the Colorado River Basin can those exchanges occur? And now let's look at volumes. I mean, the desalters that are being envisioned for Carlsbad, it's starting at 50,000. There are plans to take it to 100,000. How much larger can it be made? But Metropolitan has to import 4 million acre feet a year for Southern California. Those desalters are drops in the bucket. Remember that under normal conditions, 1 foot in Lake Mead is 100,000 acre feet. So it's a matter of what are the conditions under which those exchanges can occur. And as I've said time and again, I think our first opportunities are going to be with Mexico. There are limitations, technical limitations around that as well, but I think you will see it happening as an exchange from Mexico probably sooner than you will from California.
If you're just joining us, we're talking about the drought with Pat Mulroy, Senior Fellow for Climate Adaptation and Environmental Policy at Brookings Mountain West at UNLV and former head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Nevada is suffering through serious drought conditions that have affected every part of our state, from lakes at near-record lows to ranchers selling off some of their herds to make ends meet. Pat Mulroy, we talk about drought and its impact on Nevada on a regular basis on this program. So when it comes to discussing drought here, is there something that we're missing as we have this ongoing conversation?
Oh, there's something we're really missing, and that is the missing conversation that is void of hyperbole and knee-jerk reactions between the agricultural community and the urban community. I think this is a story of lost opportunities. There are so many opportunities where urban areas can help agricultural areas prepare for drought spells like this, and there are opportunities for agricultural areas to partner with urban areas. We have allowed ourselves to get sucked into the noise, the emotional noise, the acrimony. It is so easy to say no. It is so easy to be fearful. I think if we can't get over that, whether it's in the Colorado River Basin or within the state of Nevada, then we have nobody to blame but ourselves.
Do you see do you see us as needing somewhere down the road when we start thinking about water, and I guess we start looking to the west in California? Are we going to need to kind of cut back on our consumption of things like almonds and pistachios? They're very water intensive, and agriculture in the Central Valley is taking an incredible amount of groundwater. I mean, is that one of those?
Well, the Central Valley exhausted the groundwater opportunities last year. They were hoping against hope that this would be a much better snow year in the Sierras, and it's worse.
Yeah, so nothing doing there.
I think the pain, the suffering that you're going to see in the Central Valley is going to be more pronounced this year, not less. And I think because the groundwater table has dropped in the Central Valley as badly as it has, their opportunities to utilize groundwater are going to be severely limited. This is going to be a challenging year for California, and they really are in the bullseye. What happens, though, with the global food economy is we'll tear down more rainforests in Brazil. More land will be cleared in wetter areas in order to replace those crops. The demand is there, and if you talk to any farmer, he responds to the demand. And he responds to the price signals that are sent. So if certain products and certain commodities, if the price starts going up, you watch farmers in other areas start growing that in lieu of other things.
There was a recent article in the Reno Gazette Journal wondering if California could siphon off the water designated for northern Nevada because many of our reserves
now, that is absolutely nonsense.
That's what I wanted to ask you about. Are there laws?
Here we go. Mm-hmm. Rather than thinking longer term and saying, look, we need strategic partners. You talk to any business these days, and they'll tell you that part of their long-term strategy is identifying strategic partners that they need going forward with their business. Mm. Well, that's no different in this arena. So for us to start saying, oh, my heavens, California's going to what, drill a vertical shaft and siphon Nevada's water or somehow steal Nevada's water, that kind of hyperbole has got to stop. It is sheer nonsense.
And yet, what about in states of emergency? Humans don't necessarily have the ability to think long term when they're facing immediate crises. Are there laws that are set aside for the greater good? And are there those kinds of things where we, instead of being partners and thinking strategically, there might be some kind of a temptation to act impulsively? And
I understand they may want to act impulsively, but what are they going to do, stealthily do this? Nobody's going to notice as they build the facilities needed to do it? Look, Californians aren't fools. They understand perfectly well that whatever pain and suffering they're going through is replicated on the Nevada side. And for them to try to do something secretly or stealthily, it's just not going to happen.
Now, you have also said that the challenge closer to home for Las Vegas is the perception that we are close to Lake Mead, so that we're the perception being that we're taking more water from the reservoir than other states. How do we get past that perception? I mean, not everybody understands the nature of the how water in Lake Mead is divvied up.
Education, education, education.
Yeah.
And then you have to ask yourself, what audience do you need to have understand that? Do you need the hot dog salesman down on Fifth Avenue in New York to understand it? Or do you need the people who are really citizens of this basin to understand it? And if you were to look at who are the citizens of this basin, those that understand the water supply in any way, shape, or form, they perfectly understand that the vast majority of the water in this basin goes to agriculture, as it does for water globally.
So how is Las Vegas hurt in its pursuit of drought remedies when the perception is not necessarily the reality?
Well, but I think in those circles where the decisions are made and where it matters, that perception is meaningless.
Hmm. Yeah.
And it is then up to our strategic partners in the lower basin to verbalize that to their own constituency. Us telling someone else that won't have near the magnitude as their representatives sending the same message, and they are sending the same message.
Yeah. Now, for over a decade, Las Vegans have heard that we are in the middle of a drought, and now we're hearing what's 4 years of really, really severe droughts. And are we getting a certain sense of drought fatigue with all these messages that, you know, we're not getting the 4 to 4.5 inches of rainfall a year that we need? I mean, is there something going on with that where when you say, we need to get information out there? How do we best do that without all that noise that you were alluding to just kind of drowning out everybody's ability to hear?
Well, when you say drought fatigue, I mean, what are you saying? People are sick and tired of hearing about the drought?
Well, I suppose it's akin to what's been called compassion fatigue in some parts of the world where things go on for so long that after a while, it doesn't have the resonance that it might have had initially.
Right, and what is the normal human reaction to that? It is fix it. Do something to make us have to stop talking about it. Have a longer-term plan and a longer-term strategy that allows us to get through it. We here in the West have got to get our heads around that the 21st century is going to be much, much drier than the 20th. And this adjustment of thinking that we live in a land of abundance when, in truth of fact, we live in a area of shortage takes some time. And so, yes, some people may have fatigue, but does the East Coast have snow fatigue? Probably. Does the midsection of the country have tornado fatigue? Probably. Do communities along the Mississippi have flood fatigue? Probably. So it's once you reach that point of exhaustion and you've worn out all your emotional responses, maybe then we can get practical.
Mm. We got another minute or so together, Pat Moeller, and I wanted to ask you a question that we seem to ask almost every time you're on the program. You know, you just kind of hit the play button and play it again. But we wonder, and we hear from listeners who wonder, if there are limits to growth in Southern Nevada that we need to talk about more than we have been talking about to this point as water shortages continue.
That is the standard, I don't have any answers, so I'm going to no growth response.
Mm-hmm.
It can't be accomplished unless you want to create economic chaos in Southern Nevada. And on the most human of levels, who doesn't get to come here? Who doesn't get to have the next generation stay here? How do you do that? The aggregate population on the planet is growing. Where do you want these people to go? We're going to put up a moat around Southern Nevada and say, no one can come here. Show me the large urban area that has ever successfully limited growth.
Pat Milroy is a senior fellow for climate adaptation and environmental policy at Brookings Mountain West, and for many years was head of the Southern Nevada Water Authority. Pat Milroy, always good to have you here. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. It's great to be on.